Ari Rosenbaum here with That 401k Podcast. This week's topic, weird things that have happened to 401k plans. The full title is It Happened, Weird Things That Have Happened to 401k Plans, and we'll explain the title and the significance to me. And of course, first things first, That 401k Virtual Conference number 10, we're doing that on April the 9th. That 401k Virtual Bunch, we're also doing on Monday, May the 10th, with special guest Congressman Jamie Raskin, who was supposed to be at that 401k National Virtual Conference in January, but had to cancel because of this little thing called impeachment. And he was one of those impeachment managers. And, you know, while we think that my events are really special and fantastic and can't miss, you know, congressional duties do certainly take precedence. And, you know, we'll be scheduling more virtual events, trying to get more guests for that 401k virtual bunch. It's just been a little haphazard. I've been all very busy with stuff. Month of February was a very challenging month because I got a lot of my medical stuff out of the way. First physical in a couple of years. First colonoscopy in 5 or 6 years. I don't know why I'm sharing this, but I always do. And then I had surgery on my nose to relieve some pressure and allow me to breathe and work on my sleep apnea, which has been working quite well. So we've been a little bit slow in scheduling some of the virtual events, but that 401k National Virtual Conference, we are going to have that next January. You could sign up at the401ksite.com. We have a couple people already signed up. Great 2-day event. We'll bring in guests, special guests, like we did this year with Walt Frazier and Doc Gooden. We'll see what Larry and I can come up with. Great presentations, a great 2-day event. No need to travel, stay home, watch it on demand. Watch it eventually on YouTube if you don't want to pay for it. I didn't say that. But anyway, it's only $20.22 to sign up right now. Go to that 401ksite.com for further information. And we'll be scheduling the live events. I envision that the rescheduled St. Louis date will be in September. I believe that we'll have dates in August and Las Vegas in December. You know, things are so much up in the air. I think that, you know, the hope is that, you know, stadiums are opening up. Hopefully, we will have a networking event in July at Citi Field, which we were supposed to have last year. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's still a little bit in flux. Everybody's getting their vaccines. I have one scheduled soon. And hopefully life will come back to normal, slowly but surely. And, you know, the numbers are looking good. More vaccinations, that's therefore decreasing the amount of infections and the amount of deaths. So despite those naysayers on the Facebook community groups, the vaccine works, and I'm looking forward to normal life soon. So hopefully we'll shortly share some rescheduled dates. So as far as this week's topic, it happened, weird things have happened to 401k plans. One of my favorite sports since I was a kid was boxing. We had HBO as a kid in Brooklyn. We didn't have cable until 1989, so I was 17. But for some reason, we got HBO. It was like a little box that you just flicked the switch, and you had HBO. And HBO was very good in those days. They don't have it anymore, but boxing was their big deal. And, you know, was a big fan of Marvin Hagler, watched a lot of Larry Holmes fights, but, you know, Mike Tyson, of course, and one of my favorite boxers of all time is George Foreman. As people probably know from my Facebook page and some of the other stuff I do, I used to go to a lot of autograph shows with my son, and occasionally there'd be a boxer, and there's some boxers I just had no interest in meeting. Vito Antifermo, who got his rear end kicked by Marvin Hagler. And he was in Godfather Part 3. I had no interest in seeing him. Some of the other guys. But if it was a big guy like a Mike Tyson or Larry Holmes or Thomas Hearns, you know, I'm going to go meet. And one of the people I did meet was George Foreman. And one of the first things I said to George Foreman is, "It happened. It happened." And that comes from the 1994 championship bout between George Foreman and Michael Moore. Michael Moore was the heavyweight champion for WBA and the IBF, I think. I think at that point, WBC was Lennox Lewis. But anyway, Michael Moore was beating George Foreman for most of the fight. In the 10th round, as George Foreman had predicted, Michael Moore was right in front of him, and Foreman knocked him out. He hit him really hard, straight, like a 1-2, and Moore was still standing, but apparently, according to Michael Moore, he was out on his feet. Foreman decided to lower the punch, another 1-2, and Moore was down, and he was counted out. And Jim Lampley, who was announcing the fight with Gil Clancy, and you could watch on YouTube. I love watching that that clip. And Jim Lampley says, as soon as the knockout, and remember, George Foreman was Jim Lampley's color analyst, and obviously he couldn't for that fight. So Jim Lampley was like, "It happened! It happened!" And it's such a great call. It's, to me, it's, I would say it's it's not as iconic as "Do You Believe in Miracles?" But it's up there for me at least. And, I love that call. And this article is really about things that have happened to 401k plan sponsors. Really weird things that have happened to 401k plans, you know, and this goes back to the time when I first was on LinkedIn, you know, when I first started my practice in 2010. And I was, along with James Holland, talking about, you know, fiduciary issues and whatnot, and there was somebody out there who I don't think is on LinkedIn anymore, but he wasn't even a broker or advisor, he was a CPA, but he said that, you know, James Holland and I were selling fear that small plans and medium-sized plans don't get into trouble. But as we see, you know, in history over the last 11 years, litigation isn't the big threat to small, medium-sized 401k plan sponsors. It's the problems that, you know, some of the problems that we're going to discuss that are very strange, but they actually happen, and they actually happen more often than you think they do, because we have a lot of plan providers out there that don't know what they're doing, and more importantly, we have 401k plan sponsors that don't know what they're doing. One of the crazy things dealing with, you know, 401k plans is our plan documents and, you know, qualified plans and obviously ERISA covered plans have to have a written plan document. There are certain times that, you know, the IRS requires plans to be restated and amended because of a change in the law. If a plan sponsor fails to restate or amend their plan within the time limits, that is grounds for the plans to be disqualified or to be in huge problems. And the problem with plan documents, if the restated documents and amendments are missing, and even if the plan sponsor is certain that they did them, the IRS will always take the position that the documents never existed. The problem with plan documents that a lot of plan sponsors don't realize that even if they get them timely from their TPA or risk attorney, whoever's drafting plan documents, they actually have to sign and date it. I just had a client who in 2011 had basically like a Kyo solo retirement plan, and they never properly signed it, and they had to spend $3,500 in penalties, and I did the fee for almost next to nothing because it was one person plan. I felt bad for him, but you know, he never signed the plan document in 2011. Something as simple as that, just signing and dating it. We don't believe in backdating stuff because it's illegal. So, you know, it's a stupid mistake, but it happens. It happens so often. Right now I have a plan sponsor who I sent the plan documents in 2016, and it looks like maybe some of the adoption agreements weren't signed. They did sign the master plan document and the ancillary amendments, but, you know, that could be an issue. And you'll be surprised how many plan sponsors go to me with silly problems, just as, you know, simple as not signing a plain document that they got from a few years back. So it happens, and it happens more often than you think they do. Next, the next one is dealing with not verifying hardship distribution requests, and Everybody knows that I'm a big Stone Cold Steve Austin fan. The name of my fiduciary company where I serve as a 316 is called Austin 316. I waited online in 1998, about 4 hours, to get an autograph from Steve Austin at the Roosevelt Field Mall at Steiner Sports Store, where Larry was working, I think, at the time, maybe running lines. It took 4 hours because Stone Cold was running late. But anyway, a few months back, I got a retro Stone Cold t-shirt that I, you know, bought 20-some-odd years ago and, of course, threw out. So I bought it again. And on the back it says, "Don't trust anyone," which is, you know, one of Steve Austin's famous quotes. And I, you know, well, I trust my wife and I trust, you know, other plan providers that I work with. You know, I trust Mike Webb, by the way. I don't trust plan participants. I just don't. And the reason is 22 years as an ERISA attorney where, you know, I have seen plan participants try to run scams. I was the ERISA attorney for a union plan, no joke, where the participant swears up and down someone stole his check and cashed it at his check cashing place. The TPA talked to the check cashing company, and we get the pictures from the check cashing place, and it's our participants. Now, our participant later claims that it was his evil twin brother or just his twin brother. But eventually, you know, I didn't buy the scam and he didn't walk away with a second distribution. But, you know, people are always trying to run scams. You have to be, you know, really, you know, questioning it. And when it comes to hardship distributions, I want to make sure that the participant is suffering a hardship. If they are suffering an immediate and heavy financial need, according to the regs, and it can be documented, then give them the money. But, you know, you can't make a distribution request and just take their word for it. And I know a few years back, one of the big TPA providers had like a self-certifying hardship form where you didn't need to put backup. And I told the advisor this was a bad idea. And it was a bad idea later because the IRS said that on audits, they're going to look at hardship requests, and they're really going to look at multiple hardship requests from the same participant. Plan participants really need to show documentation for their hardship. They are for actual hardships. So you know, as a plan sponsor, would need to verify that, you know, actual need. I'm just surprised at how many plan sponsors out there don't verify hardships. So, you know, they just give it a blanket approval without looking at things. And I think that that's an absolute mistake because I think it's a breach of fiduciary duty. The IRS would certainly have problems with it if it was audited and all of a sudden you don't have the hardship request. I look, you know, and you'll be surprised, even the backup, it's got to be, you know, factual. You know, you can't get a hardship distribution request from a student bill from 6 years ago. You know, we have criteria. And we have to be consistent, and we have to make sure that, you know, plan participants verify with actual paperwork to show that they are entitled to that hardship distribution. Next on my list is frauds by former employees and others with distributions. You know, theft of participant account balances is rare, but plan sponsors really need to be vigilant to ensure that only plan participants can receive a distribution for their plan instead of people claiming to be the participant. You know, it's really important for plan sponsors to ask their plan providers as to their cybersecurity policy or protocols to thwart identity theft. And, you know, whatever the check and balance is on distribution requests, you know, it's happened. And again, I dealt with that plan participant who tried to cash his check at the check cashing place and claimed someone else stole his money. But we've seen litigation where you know, we've seen, you know, more and more so where through cyber theft that, you know, people's account balances have been stolen. And if you look at some of the cases, the reason it happened was because the plan sponsor or the plan provider was sleeping. I forget which one of the cases it was, but it was something where it was clear that the participant's identity was stolen. The check they used to do the ACH was a new account. The addresses didn't match. So there was like a whole host of issues, and that the plan provider and the plan sponsor just didn't want to see or just weren't seeing. It's a problem. I'm not interested, in certain situations and stories. I just want to make sure that people entitled to get a distribution get it. I mean, I've seen theft by, I saw attempted theft at a TPA that I worked at. One of our administrators almost successfully transferred an account balance of a plan participant in one of our 401k plans to his own IRA, and the only reason he was caught was because he got his own IRA account number wrong. You'll be surprised that cyber theft is a real threat out there, and it's growing and growing and growing. So plan sponsors really need to make sure that their providers have a system in place to make sure that these things don't happen. Next on the list is not checking trust statements. So if there's theft, if there's large amounts of theft, so we're talking Matt Hutchinson and Jeff Ritchie type of theft, where a plan provider steals from a plan that they work on, which I will never understand. I always say that Matt Hutchinson, who if you Google, I think one of his children is trying, there was a story with Matt Hutchinson. He stole $3 million from 401k plans, and, President Obama framed him. I know Matt Hutchinson. I was a plan fiduciary who replaced Matt Hutchinson. The story with Matt always changed. You never could get a true story out of him. He stole $3 million, and he still has a couple of people who still believe him that he was innocent. He was guilty. But between him and Jeff Ritchie, I will never understand why somebody who acts in fiduciary capacity would steal millions of dollars from clients' 401k plans and think they can get away with it. Or too many fingerprints. I always say that, Hutchinson had a better chance of robbing a bank than he did of stealing millions from his clients in a multiple employer plan. Not checking trust statements is one of those checks and balances that, plan sponsors don't do. If Jeff Ritchie steals $3 million from a 401k plan, one of the easiest ways to get tripped up is to see a trust statement. Now, he may have made sure his clients didn't receive trust statements because he was a 316 administrator, but I believe that looking at trust statements is a great, check and balance to making sure that millions aren't stolen from the plan. You can kind of notice in a trust statement any large outflows. Small outflows are hard to trace, but large outflows to me are not. You'll notice if somebody steals hundreds and hundreds of thousands from a plan. And I think the plan sponsors really need to review that quarterly trust statement as a way of ensuring that, a rampant amount of fraud isn't going on with the plan. Next on my list of weird things that happen, not reviewing what the plan providers are doing. There are too many 401k plan sponsors out there that, they're like a villain in a James Bond movie, and they have this kind of death plan for James Bond, and they assume everything goes to plan, and it never does, which Austin Powers did a really funny joke about with Dr. Evil. Plan sponsors really can't afford to assume that their plan providers are going to do their job and do it competently. I talk about that client that the actuary for 25 years didn't handle the plan in terms of preparing valuations, in terms of giving poor advice. And so the plan sponsor was accused of embezzling money from their own plan. And all the plan sponsor could say is, I trusted him. I trusted him 25 years. I thought he was doing his job. Well, you didn't check. Too often, a plan sponsor will land into trouble because of the malfeasance of the plan provider, and the errors are found years after the fact. If a plan sponsor is diligent and reviews their plan providers on an annual basis, that's a great way to ensure that, there's not going to be a problem later. You can only blame the plan provider oh so much, because ultimately, at the end, as we all know, the plan sponsor is on the hook for liability. Next on the lookout, last but not least, is, of course, overpaying plan providers. You have a fiduciary duty to pay only reasonable plan expenses for the service provided. That's what plan sponsors have to do. No matter how much a plan sponsor may love their provider, they can't overpay their plan providers. And overpaying plan providers could be a breach of their fiduciary duty. I had that situation. I think I've certainly talked about it in the podcast. I've written about it, and I didn't admit that I was a 316 administrator. And I've told the story. And this was a plan where the TPA kept on overpaying the plan providers. So one quarter, I get this huge check, which I know is in excess of what I'm entitled to. So I put the money in my attorney trust account, my attorney escrow account. And when the TPA asked for it back, I handed the money over. Apparently, the TPA paid the advisor's fee to me. Then the client wasn't happy with the TPA and terminated the services of the TPA and terminated my services. They were going to a new provider that offered 316 on their own. So, I don't take it personally. Things happen. You're hired to be fired, as I always say. And so what happened, what was really amusing, was months later, I hear from the advisor on the plan. He has switched firms to a new RIA. And apparently the TPA paid his old firm while he was there four times their fee. So instead of the quarterly fee, they got their annual fee. And he said that as 316 administrator, I should have caught it. And I agree with him. But the only problem was he wanted me as 316 administrator to come up with that money and reimburse the plan sponsor. And I said, Your old firm got four times the fee that they were entitled to. Why don't you just hand over the money? That's the easiest solution. Didn't like my answer. Didn't respond to me. Has the plan sponsor email me with the same demands? And I just couldn't believe it. They didn't come after the TPA. They didn't hand over the money. But they were just going to try to squeeze me to get back, it was like $6,000, $9,000, whatever the amount was. So I told the plan sponsor, respectfully, that the advisor getting four times the fee was a breach of their fiduciary duty. It was a prohibited transaction. If you have a contract that says, I'm going to pay you 25 basis points quarterly, and they pay you 25 basis points, one quarter instead of that 0.0625. The contract says one thing. You have to pay whatever the contract says. If you pay them in excess, that is a prohibited transaction. And I said to the plan sponsor that if the advisor doesn't refund the money by, I gave him a week, I was going to refer the matter to the Department of Labor. Needless to say, the advisor agreed to cough up that money, and his old firm did as well. It's really interesting that they tried that scam on me. As I always say, I was born in Brooklyn. You're going to have to wake up a lot earlier in the morning to try to hustle me or scam me. But it's one of my favorite stories. And a few months back, I finally admitted that I was the 316, because about a year or so ago, I wrote the story. And people are incredulous, but that's what people are trying to do. You'll be surprised, and I was surprised that it was an RIA who tried this. But, a plan sponsor can't overpay their plan providers either by accident or on purpose. On purpose, if the fees are not reasonable for the services provided, that's a huge problem. So when I tell everybody my dispute with this TPA who wanted the plan I run to pay $70,000 for a $5,500 valuation that we paid for as part of an annual fee, I told the TPA, take a hike. I pay you that fee out of, participants' accounts, not out of my pocket. I'm breaching my fiduciary duty by paying a fee that is not reasonable. That's excessive. Even if we took the TPA's argument that they were entitled to that $5,500 in valuation fee because the work was being done in July or October 2021 and they were only being paid through February. You got to realize that plan sponsors can't overpay their plan providers purposefully or accidentally. And so plan sponsors really need to be vigilant in what they're paying their plan providers because, you know, we got regulations in place since 2012, almost 9 years that we've had this. And it's paramount that plan sponsors understand that, they can't overpay their plan providers no matter which way they do it or how they do it. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode of F4K Podcast. Of course, like I said, sign up for our Zoom events. Go to that4ksite.com for further information on that 4NK National Virtual Conference. And hope you join me next week with another episode of that 4NK Podcast. Take care. Thanks.